individual concepts are taken over. The dialectical forms of the movement of thought show themselves to be the same as those of reality. A hydrogen atom observed in isolation has its specific characteristics, acquires new ones in molecular combination with other elements, and displaces the old ones again as soon as it is freed from the combination. Concepts behave in the same way. Considered individually, they preserve their definition, while in combination they become aspects of new units of meaning. The movement of reality is mirrored in the fluidity of concepts. Footnote 40, text. Page 438. The open-ended materialistic dialectic does not regard the rational as completed at any point in history and does not expect to bring about the resolution of contradictions and tensions, the end of the historic dynamics, but the full development of mere ideas and their simple consequences. It lacks the aspect of the idealistic dialectic which Hegel described as speculative and at the same time as mystical, namely the idea of knowing the ostensibly unconditioned and thereby being oneself unconditioned. It does not hypothesize any such universal systems of categories. Footnote 41, text. To attain the positively rational, it does not suffice to resolve and transcend contradictions in thought. It requires the historical struggle whose guiding ideas and theoretically prerequisites are indeed given in the consciousness of the combatants. But the outcome cannot be predicted on a purely theoretical basis. It will be determined not by any firmly outlined unity such as the course of history, the principles of which could be established indivisibly for all times, but by human beings interacting with one another and with nature, who enters into new relationships and structures and thereby changes themselves. The resolution of contradictions in subjective thought and the overcoming of objective antagonism can be closely intertwined, but they are in no way identical. In a particular historical period, a free society in the sense of the free development of the individual and in the sense of free enterprise on the basis of inequality will be conceptually and actually full of contradictions. The resolutions in terms of ideas occurs through the concept of a differentiated higher form of freedom. It has a decisive voice in the real overcoming, but in no way coincides with it and predicts the future only abstractly and inexactly. Since the logic of the open-ended dialectic allows for the possibility that change will affect the entire present content of the categories, without therefore considering the theory formed from it as any less true, it corresponds exactly to the Hegelian conception of the difference between dialectic and understanding without overlaying it with a new dogmatism. The intelligible exists in concepts in their fixed definition and differentiation from others. The dialectical shows them in their change and disintegration. Footnote 42, text. To be sure, the first is immanent in the second. Without the definition and organization of concepts, without understanding, there is no thought and also no dialectic. But the understanding becomes metaphysical as soon as it is absolutized, its function of preserving and expanding existing knowledge, of confirming, organizing, and drawing conclusions from it, or the result of that function as the existence and progress of truth. The revolutionizing disintegration and restructuring of knowledge, its changing relation to reality, its changes of function resulting from the intertwinement of history fall outside the thought processes which traditional logic, whose theme is understanding comprehends. Page 439. Taken by itself, it leads to the erroneous concept of a detached thought with fixed, eternal, and autonomous results. Nietzsche said that a great truth wants to be criticized, not worshipped. Footnote 43, text. This is valid for truth in general. He might have added that criticism includes not only the negative and skeptical impulse, but also the inner independence not to let the truth fall, but to remain firm in its application, even if it may sometimes pass away. In the individual, the process of cognition includes not only intelligence, but also character. For a group, not merely adaption to changing reality, but the strength to declare and put into practice its own views and ideas. The initially discussed division in the bourgeois spirit with regard to truth, in contrast to dialectical thought, finds especially clear expression in the attitude toward religion. In the face of the primitive materialism which dominates economic life, it has become more and more internalized. The practice of general competition, which characterizes contemporary reality with pitiless from the beginning and with the exception of a few periods, has become increasingly inhuman. Its means and consequences, which at particular historical moments have led to domination by small economic groups, the abandonment of power to the most culturally backward elements of society, and the extermination of minorities, notoriously contradict the basic teachings of Christianity. In a period in which, despite great resistance, reading and writing has to become common skills for economic reasons, and the content of the Bible could not remain a permanent secret from the masses, it had long been inevitable that the opposing principle of Christianity would be openly sacrificed to reality, and the vulgar positivism of bare facts, along with the worship of success imminently in this lifestyle, propagated as the exclusively and highest truth. But the cross contradiction that exists was really understood within the bourgeois only by religious outsiders such as Kierkegaard and Tolstoy. The monistic propaganda of Strauss and Haeckel, who proclaimed it on the basis of scientific research, saw only the difference which it implied between natural sciences by itself and revelation, and misunderstood both the spirit of the gospel and historical reality. These materialists, on the basis of natural science, had to remain sectarians, for religion was indispensable for the social group to which they belonged. The predominant intellectual attitude in recent centuries was not that of exposing the split. Instead, religion was so robbed of any clear and definite content, formalized, adapted, spiritualized, relegated to the innermost subjectivity, that it was compatible with every activity in every public practice that existed in this atheistic reality. Page 440. Since individuals began to think more independently, that is, since the rise of the new economic order, philosophy in all fields has ever more clearly fulfilled the function of erasing the contradiction between the dominant way of life and Christian or Christian-oriented theoretical and practical doctrines and ideas. The reason for this coincides with the root of bourgeois dogmatism in general. The isolated individual who is simultaneously regarded as free and responsible is in the present epoch necessarily dominated by anxiety and uncertainty. In addition to this inner need which is directly grounded in the atomistic principles of the existing order. The external concern for social peace has led to great efforts to gloss over the irreconcilability of modern science and the way people conduct their lives with the religious view of the origin and structure of the world, as well as the ideas of love for one's neighbor, justice, and the goodness of God. Troeltsch, a typical philosopher of religion in pre-war Germany, openly states what he fears. To anyone even moderately acquainted with human beings, it will be inconceivable that divine authority could ever disappear without damage to the moral law, that the generally coarse-thinking average man could do without this supplement to the motivation of morality. The abstraction of a self-validating law will be forever unrealized for him. In connection with law, he always will think of the lawgiver and watcher. He may think of this as a bit coarsely, but not so irrationally. Where atheistic morality has undone divine authority among the masses, experience shows that there is little sense of that law left. A fierce hatred of all authority and an unbounded unchaining of selfishness as the most obvious thing in the world has been, with few exceptions, the easily comprehensible logical consequences. Footnote 44, text. A social situation in which there would be no watcher, either in the form of a transcendent being or a self-validating law, to hold the unbounded selfishness of the masses in check, is something he cannot conceive of. Dogmatic adherence to the inherited conceptual world seems to him a self-evident proposition, a thema probandum. Nevertheless, he also sees that the Protestant and confessional axiom must be self-revised and more freely interpreted, that its accomplishment must find a broader, more general basis and make themselves far more independent of immediate clerical reality, that this style must leave room for detailed historical research and the definite results of natural science and be constantly prepared for new revisions on the basis of his work. Indeed, the possibilities exist that eventually Christianity itself will cease to be axiomatic. Footnote 45, text. Page 441. The axiom, of which earlier liberal theology could reach back, have meanwhile been overturned. Kant and Schleiermacher, Goethe and Hegel, still lived under the influence of an axiomatic validation which no longer exists. Footnote 46, text. He therefore recommends consulting to Grant's critical philosophy, which undertakes to discover the ultimate presupposition in the origination of consciousness instead of metaphysics. Footnote 47. He seeks refuge in a critique of religious consciousness and hopes. Footnote 48. Text. To find a firm footing through a general theory of religion in its historical development, but this theory itself would have to be rooted in transcendental theory of consciousness and to answer from this ultimate basis of all scientific thinking, this ultimate and correct presupposition, two questions, the question of the justification of religion in general and that of the difference in value between its historical forms. Theology is thereby referred to the philosophy of religion, but this basis only will be able to construe the essence and validity of Christianity. As to satisfy the modern spirit of taking nothing for granted, the ultimate presupposition lies in the philosophy of transcendentalism. Footnote 49, text. According to this, the justification of religion in general and even the advantages of Christianity are still the question.